Este canto es para referirme a un hombre que cree que tiene el mundo entero en sus manos, no sabiendo que está muy equivocado y se le puede venir una hecatombe. Con ese armamento se cree un Superman. A Uribe y los gringos maldice y ultraja. El tiro le va a salir por la culata y como a Saddam Hussein le va a pasar. Deja la amenazadera, porque tú lo sabes, Chávez, que cerquita la frontera.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Javier Corrales, who is a professor of political science at Amherst College in Amherst, Massachusetts. He's also the author of Dragons in the Tropic, Hugo Chavez and the Political Economy of Revolution in Venezuela, and serves on the editorial board of Latin American Politics and Society and America's Quarterly. He's been a consultant to the United Nations, the Center for Global Development, and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. He's also working on a book manuscript on constitutional reforms in Latin America. Welcome to Background Briefing, Javier Corrales.
Thank you for having me.
And the rumors are flying thick and fast in Venezuela. I've been speaking to people down in Venezuela, many of whom are fairly well connected, but they don't really want to go on the record. There's a sense of, I don't know what kind of political oppression we're talking about, but the long and the short of it is there's a great deal of rumors swirling around the impending death of Hugo Chavez. How do you gauge these rumors? Because he was on television just yesterday in a prolonged meeting, but he's apparently in a kind of cocoon controlled by Cuban intelligence, so it's hard to know what's going on. What's your reading on it, Javier?
These rumors have been going on since mid-2011 when Chavez officially announced that he was suffering from cancer. In many ways, the rumors are unavoidable, in part because the Venezuelan government treats this situation with utmost secrecy. Almost nobody knows exactly what is going on. The government has said, or Hugo Chavez has said, that he is cancer-free and recovering, but there is no question that his physical appearance has changed, and also that he is a less visible president. There is no question that he is ill and fairly disabled compared to what Venezuelans were used to prior to mid-2011. However, it's perhaps a bit premature to jump into any conclusions as to the gravity of his illness and the president's longevity. The president was very visible earlier this month when he hosted a meeting of Latin American presidents, and it is true that he has gone back into some type of behind-the-door mode of operation. But again, I wouldn't want to speculate beyond that about the president's health.
Well, Javier Corrales, I'm told from the people I talk to in Venezuela that some of them think he has as little as weeks to live. Now, you obviously have to discount these rumors because they are rumors. But on the other hand, the government is protecting him and there is this kind of cocoon. So, but the real question would be, though, if this prognosis is as bad as many suggest, he probably won't be around for the October elections, even though he's running now. The opposition elections to choose an opposition candidate begin in February. So clearly this is going to have an enormous impact on this upcoming election.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It has already had an impact. The most important impact it has had thus far is that his own political movement, his Socialist Party, for the first time is beginning to think about questions of succession. This makes Chavez nervous, and this is a type of conversation that he's desperately trying to avoid. This is not what he wants to be happening, but it's almost inevitable at this point. So even if he survives, you have already seen the first consequence, which is a ruling party that begins to think of a world without its founding leader. If Chavez's health deteriorates and he needs to withdraw politically or even officially, there will be an important question as to whom will succeed him, will be the nominee. And at the moment, it is very difficult to gauge whom exactly Chavez will choose, or if it's done democratically, whom exactly the party will choose.
So the one thing that one keeps hearing from people in Venezuela is the enormous social anxiety about personal security, about the terribly high crime rate. And, you know, it really does affect people's lives. That's separate from the incredibly polarized politics in this country between the kind of Bolivarian circles, those who support Chavez, largely the poor people whose lives he's undoubtedly improved, and then the sort of the middle class and the old regime, etc. That's a pretty deadly mixture, isn't it? If you have political instability, you've got political polarization, and you've got a high crime rate.
Yes. The crime rate in Venezuela is so extraordinarily high. It's probably one of the highest in the world based on homicides. Just alone, that doesn't include other forms of crime. It is so high at the moment that it is no longer accurate to say that this only affects one sector of the population, an income group, or a region. It's everywhere. And it's beginning to affect even communities that were strongly behind the president. They're now heavily involved in this horrendous crime wave. And all polls suggest that this is now the most important issue in Venezuela. It is very important in most Latin American countries, no doubt about it, but it has risen to the very top in Venezuela. And the issue is interesting simply because in the 12 years that Chavez has been in office, there has been a policy of almost laissez-faire about crime. There isn't any type of real initiative. And so this is probably a liability for the government in a way that it wasn't before, simply because this is a government that hasn't produced a policy response as this issue has become a top priority for the vast majority of Venezuelans. It's important to be very clear that you know, Venezuela's cities, but also Venezuela's countryside, are extraordinarily dangerous, even during daylight. The probability of suffering some kind of a form of petty crime or serious crime is very high.
Again, I'm speaking with Javier Corrales, who's a professor of political science at Amherst College and the author of Dragon in the Tropics, Hugo Chavez and the Political Economy of Revolution in Venezuela. So what would explain the high crime rate, Javier, and what would explain Chavez's lack of response to it?
The expansion of crime has got to do with the fact that there is a system of impunity in Venezuela. You have the underlying conditions, the fact that there are economic needs to engage in crime, either because there's a lot of poverty or because there are enormous fortunes to be made through crime. But the key issue is that there is no systematic state response. People don't get, the police force is very unable to deal with this crime situation. The court system is unable to deal with the crime situation. So people rationally could conclude that the probability of getting caught or suffering some kind of sanction for engaging in crime is very low, and this, of course, creates an incentive. The second is, once you enter a crime wave, once you're a victim of crime, especially in poor neighborhoods, you then join the crime wave. You seek vengeance, you pick up arms, and so this tends to grow exponentially. But your question as to why Chavez has done very little about it, it's an interesting one. I think he realizes that he does not have the capacity to act, to deal with this in an effective way. And so to launch a war on crime with half-baked measures could backfire. And he has discovered that it is better to just let it go, make sure that the crime wave affects mostly non-state actors, which is what's happening now. And he has discovered that this is an easier way to live. He would not like to have a situation such as the one that President Calderon in Mexico is having, where they have decided to take on the issue of insecurity, crime, drug-related violence, But this has produced some kind of a backlash, and Chavez has said that he may not want to have this kind of a war on crime. But it can cost him electorally. That is no doubt the most important negative consequence of his decision.
So the fact that crime is now affecting his poor constituencies, that's what you're saying. I mean, was he cynical about it in the sense that if crime was only affecting the wealthy and the middle class, he didn't do anything. But now that it's affecting his own people, he's going to pay a price.
He's going to pay a price electorally, but crime is still not affecting the most important aspect of Venezuela's economy, which is the oil sector. And this is the difference between being a petrostate and not being a petrostate. Crime is affecting the activities of the private sector, definitely. But the oil sector remains immune from this crime wave, and because the regime depends so heavily on it, it can give a false sense of comfort on the part of the state officials, which is what is happening in Venezuela. This is going to be an election in which, first, as serious as the crime wave is and as serious as the problem now is among and how it's affecting Chavez's supporter, he still has significant support. He does not have overwhelming support. This will not be an election that will be easy for Chavez to win. He might not even win it. But he's still competitive, right? So he may not feel that it is time to do something incredibly risky, like launching an uncertain attack on crime right now, precisely because he's still electorally competitive, but at the same time, he doesn't face an assured victory. So he won't be risky, and so I don't think he will focus on a policy initiative to tackle crime.
But Javier Corrales, given that this consensus, at least from what I can find from people in Venezuela, is the consensus is that he is terminally ill and that it's very unlikely that he will be around in October. At some point during the elections, they're going to have to find another candidate. I mean, isn't that the period that one should be concerned about?
Oh, yes, you're completely right. I believe that there is going to have to be some kind of a search for a candidate or at least for some kind of figure who could be in charge of the government, even if Chavez remains the nominal president, but the sort of like on some kind of medical leave or some kind of medical staying away. There needs to be a decision to be made as to who's going to be making some of the most important decisions. And at the moment, to my knowledge, this person hasn't been found or designated.
What about his brother, Chavez's brother, who's a governor?
He is. Adán Chavez is a governor, much more radical than Chavez, if that is imaginable. But constitutionally, he is not supposed to be in line for succession. The Constitution of Venezuela says that in the event of death, it's the vice president, and that is not a position held by Chavez's brother. If Adam Chavez were to become the preferred choice of Hugo Chavez, there will have to be some kind of either a change of the constitution or a change in the cabinet.
And what role do you think the military will play in this? Because I understand that there are elements in the military that are very unhappy with the control that the Cubans, and particularly Cuban intelligence, have over both the inner circle, the envelope, if you will, around Chavez, and its influence over the military itself.
Next to Chavez's illness and next to Venezuela's finances, nothing is more non-transparent than civil-military relations in Venezuela at the moment. You're absolutely right in guessing that the military will play a role, but we know very little. There have been rumors going on for many years that several important policies by Chavez are unwelcomed by the military. These rumors exist. And yet, the military has remained fairly loyal, or at least the upper echelon. There doesn't seem to be turmoil, at least visible to outside observers, visible turmoil in Chavez's relationship with the military. But there is no question that the military is perhaps the strongest player in Venezuelan politics at the moment, and that any conversations held at the cabinet level regarding a succession will have to obtain the green light of the military. To me, that's almost a given. But again, I wouldn't be able to tell you at this point what their preferred choice will be, only than to say that the military might play a key role here in at least the consultations pertaining to succession.
So just in closing, Javier Corrales, we haven't spoken about the opposition and who they are. And, you know, for the longest time, of course, Venezuela was ruled by a kind of crony oligarchs, I guess. And Chavez, of course, always refers to those people in Miami, which is an allusion to the ancient regime who, you know, embezzled most of the oil money. Is he still able to sell that idea? Because it's apparently a pretty new opposition now.
This is an idea that still resonates with Chavez's supporter, but not with the rest of Venezuelans. It's been 12 years that we have had a Chavista government, and the opposition has evolved significantly. The current leaders are new actors, younger people who come from different political parties, who have had experience in government that has, at least two of them, have had experience in public administration that have been fairly reasonably executed. And so they have been able to overcome this image of being part of some kind of an ancien regime oligarchy. And so that is definitely worth mentioning. This is the best moment in the life of Chavez's opposition. They have never faced a more auspicious environment than they face right now. It's still an uphill battle, but this is a good moment for them. They're enjoying some kind of a renaissance, and it will be interesting to see whether they can capitalize on this good moment that they have. They're going to be having a primary, and the next challenge that the opposition faces is whether they're going to honor their pledge to respect the results of the primary. They need one candidate, a unified candidate. They know that if they go to an election divided, if there are two candidates of the opposition, that's the end of their chances of defeating Chavez. So the question will be, after the primary, if all the candidates, the candidates who lose the primary, will solidly stand behind the winner. That's going to be their next challenge.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today. Obviously, we're speculating about something that hasn't happened here, but with so much smoke in terms of rumors, there has to be a little bit of fire here. And at the risk of being ghoulish, I think it's important to talk about.
I agree, and I thank you for asking me to be part of this conversation.
Again, I've been speaking with Javier Corrales, who's professor of political science at Amherst College. He's the author of Dragon in the Tropics, Hugo Chavez, and the Political Economy of Revolution in Venezuela. He serves on the editorial board of Latin American Politics and Society and America's Quarterly. He's been a consultant to the United Nations, the Center for Global Development, and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. He's also working on a book manuscript on constitutional reforms in Latin America. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about the connection between the Occupy movement and student debt.
I still owe money to the money I owe. I never thought about love when I thought about home. I still owe money to the money I owe. The flows are falling.